Hey, this is Dave Burgess, and you are listening to The Dave Burgess Show, where we talk education, lifestyle, entrepreneurship, fitness, wellness, principles of success, interview elite performers in their field, and most importantly, cover topics that will empower, inspire, and uplift you. Let's go.
Hey, welcome to episode 15 of The Dave Burgess Show. I am joined by George Kuros today. He is a worldwide leader in innovative teaching, learning, and leading with a focus on innovation as a human endeavor. He's taught at all learning levels from K-12, where he was a teacher, tech facilitator, school and district administrator. He's currently an adjunct instructor with the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education. He's a podcaster, highly acclaimed international speaker. He's also the author of the wildly successful In the Innovator's Mindset, the co-author of Innovate Inside the Box, and he is also author and curator of two more recent books, Inspirational, Because of a Teacher, and Because of a Teacher, Volume 2, which has just now been released. Make sure you go out and pick up a copy of that. Pick up 10 copies for you and all your friends to read together. And I also consider George a good friend, despite the fact that if you go back to season 2, episode 4, I believe it was, of the Innovator's Mindset podcast, you can hear the whole story of how we first got connected. It's not a pretty story.
But, not good.
Not good.
I'm glad you still talk to me after that. So
yeah, absolutely. And so
it took a while.
Coming out of that into, I think, not only a friendship, but then also business partners, as we are co-owners with our with Paige and with Shelley of Impress Books, so a publishing company. And so, George, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's always a pleasure to have you. And just kind of listening to the bio and stuff like that, it's kind of neat to think when we first met, not when we first met, because that wasn't good. It was after, it was when you approached me about writing The Innovator's Mindset. And one of the things that I really loved about it is I don't know if you know this, but somebody actually had me wanting to publish the book, and they're like, we don't like this. We don't like this. We don't like this. It's got to be more academic, you know? And I was like, that's not the way I write. It's not my style. In fact, it's not even a book I'd want to read. Right. And then I remember you and Shelley, I gave it to you just thinking like, oh my God, like I can't hear this again about how I suck. And then you're like, we love this. Like, we want you to. And I just remember and just really thinking about, I think that's a lesson that like I've taken, you know, with Impress, is that we want people to really share their voice, not what we think they should say and how they should say it. And I think that's something that's really important to me.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. That's, we truly believe in allowing people to write their manifestos and to share that unique thing. And what you just said was, it's not a book that you would want to read. That's a key thing too, is when I read a lot of education books today, just to be perfectly honest with you, I can't make it through the first chapter because they're spending so much time trying to justify their existence with links to research and trying to be super formal, academic, because a book is so serious. It has to be written so serious. And what people really want to read is that more conversational tone. And you want to feel like you're sitting down with someone and having a true conversation as opposed to being preached to in some sort of academic tone.
Yeah. And that you think about that, like, you know, when you're teaching, right? You think about that, the teacher that spends time building relationships for the first 15 minutes is going to get way more out of the next 45, as opposed to the teacher that just goes in at 60, right? And just tries to teach 60, where you have no relationship, you have no connection. And then you're basically wasting that 60 minutes because they don't know if you actually care about them. You're invested in the stuff that you know, I think that to me is part of it too, is that you think about what great teaching looks like. It's not just content. It's not just ideas, there is a connection. And so, yeah, like you could take any of these books and you probably could put way more stuff into them, but then way more stuff that nobody reads. And I think that to me, you know, and there's not like, there's not a place for that type of book, but I think, you know, that you're hoping that you inspire people to actually go dig out more stuff on their own as well. Not that you are the end all be all. And that's kind of one of the limits of a book, is that you can't, you know, and that's why I love having a podcast, having a blog, because I can always dig into the ideas that I shared in books, you know, before, during, and after.
Yeah. So it reminds me of a conversation that we had early on in your journey to writing The Innovator's Mindset, is you have such this belief that writing is not, you're not putting something out that's permanent. you're putting out a conversation, you're putting out, you are processing your thinking through your writing, and your thinking is not done. Just because you published that blog doesn't mean you are done thinking about that issue. And so I think one of the first kind of hurdles that you had with writing a book was like, well, wait a second, like, this is my thinking right now, but that could change as people interact with this message and as I have conversations about this message, but now it's all written out in the book. And so maybe if you could talk about that process of overcoming that hurdle of kind of the permanence of thought.
Well, I think one of the things that is really enabled to be able to kind of follow up on that is actually having the blog. Like to this day, like we're recording this in June of 2022. The book was published in 2015. I take concepts from the book and still discuss them and talk about new thinking. And I think that's one of the beautiful elements of it is that you can go look back what I wrote at that time. And I said, I even said in the book that we talk about like the notion of summative assessment. It's like, it's, you know, the end of learning in many cases, that's how we see it. But it's the end of learning at that point in that moment, because all that learning expands. And I think part of it too, is not just thinking about the stuff that you know and what you share, but I think the context of how you share it as well. And I remember actually, I was sitting in a conference. This is like early on when I was blogging, and you know that we've had these conversations before. You know, I was kind of in your face with some stuff, right? I was like really in your face, and like I did that with you, you know, at a conference. But I remember like sitting there and listening to these administrators. And I was like so frustrated because I'm like, this is so backwards. They're like not getting the, you know, the changes that need to happen in education. So I like wrote this blog post just like, if you don't do this, you're going to become irrelevant and we need to get going right now, blah, blah, blah. And what that blog post, when I look back on it, what's really interesting about that is I can really identify what that blog post did. It got everyone that agreed with me cheering. It got everyone that I disagreed with more further away from ideas in the first place. Like I ostracized them. Basically, if you're not with me, then you're wrong and you're the devil, blah, blah, blah. Now I didn't say that outright, but I kind of did. And I actually, what's fascinating is I actually took that same blog post, and I can't remember when I did that, but I specifically remember taking that same blog post and actually saying, hey, here's why I don't like this. Here's why I regret, you know, posting this. And it's still there. You can, you know, and you can kind of look back at it and go through that process. And I think part of it too is it's not just, you know, what we share, but it's, I think, the context and the way that we share these things. And like, are we really trying to move? Like when I look back on that, I think, was I really trying to move education forward, or was I trying to move my name forward? If you know, that kind of makes sense. It's like, hey, I'm going to be the guy that talks about this stuff. But really, my goal is to help kids. And when I look at that approach, I don't know if I was really helping anybody other than myself at that time. And so I really try to rethink my approach. And I think that's what's beautiful about, you know, having these spaces, you know, having, you know, you have your book on one end, you know, where you can go back and revisit some of those things, but you can also go back and look at your blog and, you know, kind of go and dig back, say, hey, maybe I think this way now, here's something I've changed in my mind. And I think there's a real power in having, you know, multiple spaces, right? Where you can look back like that was a beautiful snapshot, but I also, here's some ways I'm going to challenge how I think about things now.
Yeah. I see this mistake in social media all the time where you have people that want to create a movement and want to create some sort of change in the world, and they need more people to join them. They're trying to, and yet how they interact with people who are legitimately considering their point of view, is it alienates them. And so they're actually shooting themselves in the foot by the way that they interact with people in social spaces.
Well, and I think this is part of my recommend, like, you know, I was at that point, you know, very savvy with technology, very comfortable with social media. And I wanted everyone to be that place. Right. And I'm like, why are you not here right now? And then you look at like my brother, Alec, who had been coaxing me for years to try it. And I fought him and fought him and fought him, and easily can say, well, how come it took you so long? And I think a lot of times when we get to a point of understanding on different ideas, different areas of interest, we then believe everyone should be at the same point we're at in that moment, as opposed to stepping back and saying like, hey, like people had grace for me to get to this place as well. And so I should have the same grace for others. I should have that same context, because like there's very few people that were first with an idea, right? There's always people that they came in later to that point. And were they given the grace to kind of get to that point? I always, you've seen this video probably a million times. I've shared it a ton. That kid on the ski hill, right? That like is about to jump down the ski hill. And they're like talking themselves about why it's so scary and how they're freaked out. And there's like a dad kind of guiding them. There's a kid beside them, like encouraging them. And then they finally get down the hill and they're like, wow, like that was amazing. Like, you know, this seems like nothing now, right? And I always show that to leaders. I said, part of your job is to help people down that hill, to get them to like, you know, be able to take that jump, to be able to be comfortable with that. But also remember, you were also that kid at the top of the hill for something, and you should have that same empathy for others. And I think that to me is what's really important about, you know, kind of, you know, how we help move people forward is giving them grace that we weren't at the places that we are right now, that someone gave us grace, helped us along the way.
Yeah. I think, and when I think of teachers, for example, a kid walks into class 5 minutes late. You right. see some teachers say, why are you late? What's, you know, how could you be disrespect my classroom to come in here 5 minutes? And another teacher says, you know what? I'm just so happy you came. Like, welcome to class, and what an impact that has on that kid and feeling welcome in that space. And then you see that too with adults in social media, or maybe, or someone's a little late to a realization of something or to be a part of something. And rather than welcoming them, say, thank you for coming. It's like, where were you 5 minutes ago? Where were you 2 weeks ago? Where were you last year? And it just kind of, you know, it's destructive to the movement that you're trying to support. So you're already in just the opening part of this conversation, you mentioned three things: one, relationships, connections, mm-hmm. and, you know, sharing your voice in the world, like with the innovator's mindset, when you first shared your voice with the world in a book. And that's kind of how the book is broken up because of a teacher, volume two. It's an incredible book with an incredible array of educators who have contributed chapters to the book. Mm-hmm. And as those contributions came in, you mentioned that they kind of fell into these three categories of relationships, connections, and finding our voices. And so maybe if you could talk a little bit about this new book that's just hit the stores and is available now, and how inspirational a read it is for educators at all levels, even though it's about first years of teaching, this is for all teachers.
Yeah. The book actually is a second volume. So the first volume, Because of a Teacher, actually came out of my podcast. And what I did, I think it was at the beginning of 2021, I already had a podcast, but I always take this little break at the end of the year, the calendar year, because I know teachers, we have different years, right? We have the school year and the end of the calendar year. So at the end of calendar year, I always kind of take a little sabbatical away from creating. And I was like, okay, what's something I want to try? What's something I want to do that's new? And so what I did with a podcast is I started actually asking three questions to people. Who's a teacher that inspired you? Who's an administrator that inspired you? And what advice would you give to your first year teacher self? And so the reason I did that is because, first of all, you know, it's a great way to, you know, highlight practices of the past that are still relevant and, you know, have made an impact long term. But it was also to give shout outs to you know, the teachers from our past. And I think part of it was because I saw that in the year prior, for about 2 weeks, teachers were the greatest people in the world, right? It was like a 2 week period. It was really nice. And, you know, like everyone's like, oh, I can't believe you do this. Like, I'm struggling with my own child. And now I can't imagine you having 35, 40 in your class. And then, you know, that 2 weeks was up. And then all of a sudden it was like, how dare you not have my kid in your classroom? Or how dare you you know, have my kid come to your school, right? Like, or, you know, not masked, unmasked, all this other stuff, right? And I always liken this too. And I know we have a common love of basketball. The thing that I always say to people is, you know, especially in education, like I refereed high level basketball for years. I said, the thing about being a basketball referee is that you are wrong 100% of the time to 50% of the people. It just depends what 50% based on what decision you make on that day. And that's what I saw was happening, right? So I thought this is a great way to kind of honor people. So a really big mantra I have is that I always go first. I always, you know, I want to model the stuff that I'm doing. So I actually talked about teachers that inspired me when I was a kid. And what was amazing is I actually mentioned my kindergarten teacher, my grade three teacher, who was also my elementary music teacher, and my high school phys ed teacher, who was also my football coach. And I talked about their impact on me. And what was amazing that within 24 hours, each one of them had reached out to me, even though I never sent it to them. I didn't even know they knew that I was doing stuff, but somebody saw it that knew them, that connected it to them. And they reached out to me, whether it was a YouTube comment, a DM on Twitter, and it was just absolutely amazing. And I think about how many stories are similar that other kids had about these teachers that they've never heard. And so, you know, as I was getting, you know, as we were kind of doing this podcast, I just literally had an idea on a Saturday afternoon, contacted a few people. I said, what do you think of this? And I'm like, yeah, let's go. So we separated it. The first edition was separated into who's a teacher inspired you, and five people wrote about that. Who's an admin inspired you, five people wrote about that. And what advice did you give for your first year teacher self, and five people wrote about that. And so because of a teacher too, is really just about the first years of teaching, but you can actually see it's pretty amazing. There's people that are still in the classroom that are actually like Mike Muhammad is still in the classroom. He's one of the writers. There's like Dr. Latanya Goffney, who is a superintendent, one of the most well-known superintendents in the United States, especially in Texas. She is like a legend there. And it's kind of amazing because you see these people that are doing really amazing things in whatever their job is today. But then they talked about, you know, some of the struggles that they had in their first years of teaching. And they, you know, shared, and this is like, I know, again, basketball reference, Jim Valvano, laugh, cry, think. That is like the motto of my life. That's what I try to do. And that's what I set out as a target for them. So they're telling these stories about some of the struggles they have. And so a lot of times what we see is we see that, you know, the Dr. Goffneys, who are the pinnacle of their career, are one of the most well-known, but we don't see the struggle. And I think that was what's really powerful is how authentic and vulnerable all of these people are who are excelling in the profession, you know, and whatever they're doing today, sharing those stories and sharing some of the lessons that are relevant, no matter, as you said, no matter where you are in your career. And so I remember when everyone knows this book, right? First Days of Teaching, like literally that's in every staff room, you know, and like every first year teacher is given that book. And I remember that book really helping me, but I wanted to kind of think about like, how do we modernize this? Right. And not only just give it from the perspective of like one or two people writing the book, but you know, people that have different experiences that are doing different things right now, but looking at those first years of teaching, what really mattered, what resonated with them, what they learned from that, and how they still apply it today in their work. And so I think that's what's really special about the book. And now obviously I wrote a chapter for each in each part for this as well. But it's amazing because like you think about this, you give 15 people the same question and their stories and their lessons are so unique and different. And it's a book that I know you could sit and read at the beach and you'll enjoy it, or you could do it with a PD, right? You can do it with a group and there's going to be such great conversations behind what is being shared there. And so they just both books just blew me away with what other people contributed to that. And I just kind of, and it was the same thing, you know, when we talked about innovators mindset, I just kind of said like, hey, here's a word count. Here's like the question. And I just want you to make people laugh, cry, and think. And they just nailed it. It's just amazing because we wanted them to share their own stories, not like you have to write about this. And even when I talked about the three main parts of what was shared in those chapters, it was not set out at the beginning. It just, I saw themes emerging, you know, of what was being shared. And it, you know, and it kind of tells you there's some things that, you know, 20, 30 years ago that were really important still matter today, but also how do we actually have like a modernized look at those things? And I know that this book is going to resonate with people today, but I also know 50 years from now, it's also going to connect with people. And I think that's some of the power of teaching is that even though I'm known for innovation, I think there's things that, you know, are really important that will never change in education.
Yeah, it's definitely an evergreen message. And that's one of the things that, you know, with the publishing company that we're trying to do is there's going to be a new tool next week. Right. There's going to be a new tool 6 months from now. There's going to be new, but there's certain evergreen principles behind being successful as an educator. And focusing on those evergreen principles is really a powerful thing. One of the things I love about the book, you mentioned the fact that you could do it as a PD and have incredible conversations with it. In fact, it's perfectly set up for that because at the end of the sections, there's three questions for conversation. So it's already set up for you as a book study, as a conversational starter that you can use with your colleagues, with your staff. And so I think that's a really powerful way. Reading this book alone is going to be fantastic, but reading it with others and really talking about these ideas is going to take it to the next level, I think.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's something I started in Innovator's Mindset, right? Like I wanted people to have this because a lot of people say like, hey, we're trying to do a book. So like, I kind of set it up for you in the book and like giving you that stuff. But I think the other part of it too, is that we want people to, you know, have those opportunities where they can have the conversation, but we want people to really reflect. And I think like you've seen this too, is like, I'm going to read 100 books in the year. And I'm like, hey, that's great. But do you actually remember any of them? Right. And so I'd rather read 4 or 5 books and really kind of dig into them and know them inside out. So we're like encouraging people to like really reflect. And the, really the hope, you know, when we write this stuff, Dave, is that people see themselves in these stories and then they start thinking about their own story and they start sharing it. They start putting their message out there too, right? We don't want this to be like, hey, only these 15 people's stories matter. It's like, no, like, you probably see a lot of elements of the things that you did in education, like the things that we screwed up on, the things that we did really well. And so how do you actually share that story to inspire the next generation of educators? And I think that to me is, you know, it's not just about these people sharing their stories in the book. It's what they inspire others people to share as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned the stories of things that we screwed up as an educator. And you also went first in this category in the book. And shared. I'm not gonna share the story or have you share it because I really feel like they need to get the book to hear the story. But I'm just gonna tell you that George shared a story from early in his teaching career that is gonna blow your mind. I'm reading this thing. I'm going, I cannot believe this guy did this. It is like a mind-numbingly bad like mistake that George committed early in his teaching career. And like it's, I was almost like. It was almost laugh out loud reading as I'm trying to picture you doing this and trying to, and sitting in with your principal and kind of hearing the aftermath of that. So I love the fact that you were vulnerable and you shared some stuff that
was not wrong as well. That was not an easy one to write because we were talking about the book being permanent, right? It's like, oh.
Yeah. Right? That story is out in the world forever now, George.
It is. Yeah. It's a good one though.
I have a funny feeling that that's not, you're going to be hearing a lot about that story as you travel, around and give the speaking engagements.
Yeah. All right. We'll do the Dave Burgess hook right there. So I'm not going to do it anymore.
You absolutely, if for no other reason, you need to read what George did with his class. And wow. Okay. And it even start. I was laughing even at the opening scene, to be honest with you, where you got like a kind of punched in the gut with a gut check question by a kid your first 5 days in school. And a kid just like called you out right away with like, basically like, hey, what are you doing here? Kind of a question, right?
Well, actually, you know, it's funny. Like a lot of these students I talked about, like they know these stories because I still connect with them on social media, right? Like, it's funny that I've like kind of seen them grow up and, you know, share these elements, and they're kind of like moved all over the world and, seeing that. And it's kind of neat. And the one thing that, I remember specifically my first full year of teaching at a grade 4 class, and I am so connected with those students still. Like I see them there, you know, they have families of their own. It's kind of neat to see. And, several of them have reached out to me. And I think this is one of the reasons I wanted to write the book. When you look back and like, you know, the majority of teachers, when they look back at their first year of teaching, they're like, oh, if I could go back and apologize to that class, I would, right? Because you know so much more now. And you're like, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done this. And, you know, I'm no different. I look back at that class and all the struggles that I had and all the things that I didn't know at that time. And many of those students still reach out to me and say, you know, I was the best teacher they ever had. And the thing is, even when we struggle the most and we don't feel we're making a difference, I think that's, if as long as you care and as long as you want to make a difference, I think, you know, kids recognize that. And I think even though I had so many deficiencies at that time, and I still do, I just hope less. I know that I made a difference because those students told me that. And I think that's pretty powerful to this day.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, so one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, this is a great book for a teacher who's just entering the field. It's a great book for someone who's maybe considering entering the field. And one of the things I've noticed recently is the last couple of years have been really tough and morale has been low. And I've seen increasingly something that bothers me. And that is educators trying to convince our best and our brightest not to enter this profession. And that, like, I would not recommend being a teacher right now, and like, and actually actively discouraging people from entering the profession. And I think one of the great things about a book like this is it shows you how incredible this profession actually is, how wonderful it is, how much impact you're going to be able to have in the world. And I really appreciated one of the things that you have on your website. And it's the line, I'm not focused solely on preparing students for the real world, but want them to make the real world better. And this idea of educator as a life changer. And, you know, what are your thoughts as far as the people are making predictions about education being a field which is going to be increasingly tough to fill positions?
Yeah, and that's always a tough one, right? Because I think that I might not be the best person to answer this question, because I'm a big advocate. If someone's like, you know, I hate this job, I want to quit, it's horrible, I'm like, you should quit. Like, don't be miserable. Like, I have left jobs that, and it was like, it's, you know, hindsight's 2020. And, you know, at the time it's like, oh, I hate teaching here because of this person and this and this and this. And then I think the best way to move forward is to, like, what were my deficiencies at that point too? Like, what can I improve? Because, and it's not because no one else had deficiencies, it's because I don't have control over anyone else. I only have control over myself. And so, I know that there's some points I've said this a ton. Some of the best things that I've done in my life is I've left jobs, as I walked away from certain things. So I would never, if someone's like, oh, I hate teaching, it's horrible, and I'd be like, okay, then leave. And like, I remember, you know, we have a mutual friend who basically, I remember this, they were like, yeah, they wrote a post basically saying, like, principals are not needed in education. And I was a principal and I'm friends with this guy. I'm like, why would you write that? Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, because of this, this, and this. I said, the reason you believe that is because you haven't had a good principal. That's why you believe it. So you've never seen the value. I'm telling you, if you get a good principal, you'll change your mind. And 2-3 years later, he reached out to me. He's like, you were right. Cause he went to a new job. He got a new principal, totally changed his perspective. And like, I look at Kelly Wilkins, I mention her all the time. She's not on social media. You can't find her anywhere. Right. And not every educator has to be on there, and they can still make an incredible difference. She saved my career 100%. And like, I wouldn't say I had bad principles before, but I never had a principal like her. And she, like, really, you know, brought out the tools in me. And I feel horrible for saying this, because I don't know who said it. I saw a tweet in passing, and it, like, it's one of those ones that hit you like 5 minutes later. I'm like, oh, like, where is this? And they said, basically, quit telling teachers to find their why, and like, stop being the reason they're losing it. Right. And I think a lot of administrators have that, you know, have had that impact with some of the reactions they've had over the last couple of years and stuff like that too. So I think part of it too, like I said, I would never, if you want to go, right? Cause like, you know, don't stay and be miserable. Right. I think that's a really important aspect of me. But I think, you know, when you're looking at education, I think this is a community thing, right? Like, how do we make, you know, not only like how do we make schools better for our staff, for, you know, our communities, our not just our kids. That's one of the reasons I always use the term learners versus students, because I think anyone that's willing to grow and develop should be able to still aspire to reach your dreams. It's not like, hey, you're the adult, forget about it. So I think we wanted to kind of remind you, I think that's what they did really well, and that, you know, education has its struggles, you know, through that process, and, you know, trying to be the advocate of, you know, of the impact that you can have. And so there's a lot of other elements that, you know, it's like, you know, Canadian schools versus US schools versus, you know, California versus Pennsylvania, blah, blah, blah. Like, they're all different. They all come with their challenges. So I think we just wanted to shine a spotlight, but I would never, like I said, I know I've said this 3 times. If you think it's time to go, you should go. I'm not going to pretend that, cause I don't, stay and be miserable.
Yeah.
You should stay and be miserable. That'd be good. Yeah. Yeah. I've left jobs and I've been better off because of it. So.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if that's the answer that you were hoping to hear. And I don't know if that's maybe not inspiring, but I think it's real, right?
No, I think that's incredible. I think that's very real. And I think that more what I'm talking about is maybe it's right for you to go, but let's not take people that are excited about entering the profession and want to be teachers and try to actively work on the other side of that and convince them that this is not a place that they should go.
Yeah. And you think about I'm sure you had this too in your career, right? The staff room that people avoided, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I can't remember who said this to me. It was someone in my career. They said, are you a fountain or a drain? Right? Like, do people, when they actually connect with you, do they actually leave, you know, demotivated as opposed to the opposite? And I think that if you are the drain, then you're probably, there's something going on with you. And I think that's, you know, like, be in that space where we can kind of lift people up and still address, like, you know, the whole toxic positivity conversation is like, we don't really hear about toxic negativity, which is kind of fascinating because negativity can be very toxic, obviously. Yeah. But I think part of it too is I think a lot of times people are accused of that. And it's not that they don't think that there aren't issues, but they're actively trying to find solutions. And I think that's the difference, right? You can talk about issues all you want, but if we don't actually find solutions to that, they're not going to go away. And just talking about them actually sometimes makes them worse.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not, I'm not saying talking about them only, but talking about them with no action doesn't necessarily lead to something better.
Yeah, for sure. You know, George, one of the things that I think about when I consider your work is the word prolific. So you're obviously the author of multiple books. I think you're either approaching or past, is like 2,000 blog posts.
Oh, yeah.
A prolific podcaster as well. And speaker, you're traveling all the time. You're giving presentations. You have online courses. You have had just an unbelievable, prolific output of your work into the world. And I'm asking this question partly as a self-help. One of the things about a podcast is you get to ask questions that you want answers to. What would you say to someone who wants to know, like, how have you been so consistent and been able to put your work out into the world and be such a consistent creator in all of these different formats?
Well, okay. So this is, I know there's like this fear of like not putting stuff out there that's perfect, right? And I was really thinking about this too. And I like often reflect, like do little reflections on Instagram, connect there too. And a lot of times those little reflections, they're more for me than they are for anyone else, because I'll take those reflections, go back, and then I'll blog about them. So it's kind of like leaving little paper trails of things that I can kind of think about later and dig into, even though I'm like sweating and run, don't have access to a computer, because I don't like writing blog posts on phones or anything like that. But it's like, I'll go look at my Instagram, say, okay, I want to kind of dig into this. And so one of the things I talked about is that I'm not actually, like, I'm not hung up on being perfect, but I'm always striving for perfection. Like, and I think because I know that it's impossible to attain, and that always keeps me wanting to learn, wanting to get better, right? You're trying to achieve this. Like, you know, both you and I give keynotes. There's nothing better than when you're giving a keynote and you're like, oh, like this, I'm just like this. I'm just so in the moment. This is like just going so well. And you can feel that sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And you're all like, you'll like, you can get the best reception to a keynote, but you'll know something that went wrong in your head. And you're like, oh, like I wish I like, hey, that's great. I appreciate that. But it's like, I want to constantly get better. And so, you know, I think part of that too is that the strive for perfection for me is not about getting to perfect. It's always growing and getting better and continuously learning. So I don't ever see my blogs as like this finished product that this is my thinking. And, oh, what if I have a grammatical mistake or, you know, a spelling error, things like that too. And so I set the bar that it's me sharing my learning with the world. That's it. And I think a lot of people get hung up that they think that they need to write a viral post. And nothing I've ever done has gone viral. Nothing. And honestly, I kind of like that way, because I'm like, I see people go viral. I'm like, oh my God, the comments are horrible. And so part of that too, but I also like, I set expectations of when I will post things, not when I will write stuff. And I think that to me has really helped. So you mentioned like I have, we're recording this in June. You and I were talking about this. I actually have all my podcasts scheduled, because I do them ahead of time every, I have one every Thursday morning. I have one every Sunday morning. And I actually have a YouTube video, a short little clip that goes out Tuesday. And so those are all scheduled till the middle of September, 2022. So I record them ahead of time, kind of go through this. And so what I do is I have like a little Google calendar, like, you know, I have a calendar and I have like, here's my podcast that's going out on this day. Here's my podcast going out on this day. And then I have a blog that goes out every Tuesday. It hits my email list on Wednesday. And then I write. And so the only thing that I write
every single week during the week is I have an email that goes out to my email list every Saturday. And so basically I say here, like I create an accountability with the audience. Like I want them to know that on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, they are going to get an email from me. So that's what I you know, I keep true to. And so there's that like goal of me kind of doing this, but I think part of it is it forces me to do reflections. And I think reflections are the most important thing to growth. Looking back is the best thing to help us move forward. And that to me is, you know, there's an accountability I've created with the audience that they like, I have sometimes my email doesn't go out till 9:30 a.m. because something happened with MailChimp and people will email me and they're like, hey, are you okay? Where's your email? So they're expecting it at that time. And so like, you know, like it's kind of fascinating to see that, but that's how I've done it. As I say, I will have, so like if someone's starting this today, and this is the advice I always give to people, you want to start a blog? Great. Start a blog. And this is, I've seen this a million times. And I tell people, do not do this. And they'll like not listen to me. And then they just don't stick with it. They'll get really excited. They'll write 18 blog posts literally in the first week. They'll publish them as soon as they publish them. And I say like, hey, what you need to do is pick a day, pick a time. There will be a blog post that goes out every single week on that exact same time. And then people can count on you like a TV show, right? Like your friends on Thursday night. And so that's how you do this. And then now that you've built that in, you'll actually create an accountability with the audience. And like, you know, write for yourself. Like that to me, I always write for myself. And if anyone resonates with what I'm sharing to myself, great. But I think that's how I, you know, stay consistent with this stuff is that I always have things, here's when this needs to be done. So I create that accountability myself. And it's the same thing that I do, you know, I've been on a big health journey. I have like every single day, there's certain elements of things that I have to hit every single day that I've like make agreements to myself. And so like, think about this too. If I was going to ask anybody, hey, you have to be at work at 9 a.m. every day. Are you there? Of course you are. And our accountability to other people is often better than our accountability to ourselves. What I've done is saying like, hey, I'm going to create an accountability to myself and I'm going to keep that appointment just like I would for anybody else.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And you mentioned the fitness journey. One of the things I love about the email, if you're not on George's email list, make sure you subscribe. He has an email where he's putting out something. I think it's personal, professional, profound, right? That's the one that hits on the Saturday.
Yep.
And I think one of the great things that's come out of that is people seeing kind of behind the scenes a little bit to yep. and make a more personal connection with you, a more authentic connection with you. And so it's not just about education and innovation, but you're really also kind of showing a little bit behind the scenes of your life and your life as a father, especially. I've noticed, you know, obviously an increase with Clea and Georgia and some of the lessons that you've learned there. And you mentioned the fitness journey.
And like, I should do a little announcement. And we have a new baby on the way too, right? Do you know this?
I do know this. Yes. I'm never sure what it's okay to share. So,
okay. All right, breaking news. You did breaking news there on the Dave podcast.
Yeah, there you go. So baby number three on the way. Congratulations to both to Paige and you. I'm sure that the girls are excited to have
absolutely.
A young brother. That's awesome. So anyway, this fitness journey. So I think it's safe to say, and you've been very open about this journey. So I think it's safe to say that you've had some ups and downs in the past with the fitness journey, right? Like you've gone through periods of great dedication to it and then kind of slipped off the wagon a little bit, come back. I just have this sense that something's different this time in watching you and watching you talk about it. And I feel like something's clicked and that this is like, you're kind of off that roller coaster right now. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that changed and switched and kind of flipped for you that on the fitness journey?
Well, the interesting thing is that I would say I was always dedicated. I was never, but sometimes like, it's kind of like the idea of like working harder versus working smarter. There's never a time that I have worked out every single day, probably for the last 10 years, but I didn't necessarily eat healthy, right? And you know, this traveling quite a bit, it's pretty easy to eat crappy food on the road because, you know, like a lot of times there's nothing else open. And I already have a hard enough time eating vegetables, but you know, make me eat vegetables from 7-Eleven or McDonald's. Good luck. Right. Like it's already, I find it goes enough as it is. And so I think what happened was, you know, I was trying to figure out stuff, and I knew, you know, I knew I was probably, I was trying to, like, you know, be 20-year-old George who could, you know, outwork a bad diet, and, you know, 47-year-old George can't do that anymore. And so I was like, just kind of pushing this off. And I think for me, COVID really kind of, we know that, you know, one of the links for like morbidity and death was actually obesity. And I kind of fell into that. I fell into that range for sure. Now, I didn't necessarily know because I wouldn't weigh myself because I didn't want to like kind of face that truth. And then I started a program and then it was like, you got to weigh yourself. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like terrified of this. I'm sure I'm at least this weight. And then I was 40 pounds heavier than what I, you know, assumed. Cause I wouldn't face up to what my issue was. Right. And so basically, I took a lot of the tools that I said, like, and this is why I bring up the notion of dedication. I tried this program. And I think for me at that point, when I started looking at like, what were my goals and what are the things that I picked up from each of those programs? How do I actually put them all together? And that's when things started happening. And what I really kind of focused on is what is something I can do right now to improve, you know, lose some weight, because I think for me, it was like, I'm not gonna lie to you. I just want to look better. Like that for years, it was just, I want to look better. But when it was like, oh my God, like I have kids and if I get COVID based on, you know, what the science is saying, this is not me just looking better. This is me not being around for my children. Yeah. And so I think that was like the awakening for me that it was like, okay, there's something more than just looking better. And, you know, I wanted to be around for my kids and it wasn't just like, I wanted to be around, but I didn't want to like bend over and pick up Georgia and my back hurt every single time. And that's what I was going through at that time. So I think part of it too, is like, I got to figure out what a lifestyle is for me that works. And something I can maintain, not going to like any crazy diet that, you know, I can do for a certain amount of time. And so I kind of picked that up and it's not like I, like eat perfect, you know, every day, any of those things. But I think for me, what really happened is I put all these things together that I learned through the journey. And like, you know, you say you get the kind of behind the scenes and all of those things that I share, the personal, professional, the profound, it's all learning. Right. And that's, I actually like this, it's kind of funny. Like right before I got on this Zoom call with you, I just wrote another blog post of something I was thinking about. And I'm like, oh, I got to write this before I forget it. Cause like, and it's like partly of like, why did I learn to play the guitar? And I learned to play guitar because I want to play music that I loved. And why did I suck at band though? When I was a kid, because our band was like, you're going to play music you hate. And I'm like, well, why do I want to do that? And so I didn't see a bigger purpose to it. And I think that to me, so like, I look at all of those things, you know, thinking about playing guitar and why did I hate band? How does that apply to teaching? And I think that to me is what's, you know, like, this is one thing I've really changed my approach. I don't tell anyone how to teach. That's not my business, but I do talk about learning and anyone in the world can talk about learning. And I think that's part of this too, is that why I share that journey is that I know so many people struggle with some aspect of their life, just like I did. And it's like, I wanted to show that process of how I'm trying to figure stuff out and, you know, how am I maintaining this? How am I trying to get better? How am I doing this? And I think, you know, finding that purpose of like, you know, there's something bigger than just looking better. I had to figure that out. But then taking all the lessons of the things that didn't work for me, but not just saying, well, that didn't work. That was useless. Saying, well, that didn't work the way I wanted it. But what are some elements could I pull from it that will help me moving forward? And then putting all those things together. And, you know, to me, as much as I appreciate that, you see, I kind of figured it out. I know this is something I'll always struggle with, but I feel that I am very reflective on it. I write a lot of stuff down, not necessarily just to share my journey with others, but to like, hey, do you remember when you're struggling right now? Go back and read what you wrote so you can kind of, you know, figure back out. So that to me has really helped.
Yeah. You mentioned something early there that you had worked out every day for 10 years. You were never off the fitness journey. You were never off never. And so, but I think that there's a connection with that to education too, is that you were actively engaged in your fitness journey, but you were not getting results because what you were doing was not effective. And I think about that with teaching too, is that rarely do you see teachers who don't want to be good. Rarely do you see teachers who are not passionate about the profession, that's kind of a, you know, you will occasionally see some outliers like that. But generally, we're all in this profession because we want to be good, because we want to be effective, but maybe we're doing the same thing over and over again, and we're not getting the results that we want with kids, with the learning that you're talking about. And so we can still, when you look at teachers and you're trying to move them forward and help them get better at their profession, you have to remember the fact that, like, hey, it's not like they're trying to be ineffective.
Right.
They're actively engaged and they're in this profession because they probably because they love kids and they want to be helpful and useful.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's something that we have to recognize in others. Like the one thing I always talk about, a lot of people talk about taking risks, right? And when you hear the term risk, often people connect it with something inherently dangerous, like jumping off buildings and, you know, doing skateboarding tricks and stuff like that, right? And the way I define risk, and I think this is a really important element of all things in education, is a lot of times we just say the words because other people say the words, but we don't really actually dive into what the words actually mean. So I was like, hey, what people are saying risk, what does this actually mean? And so the way I was interpreting is risk is simply moving from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better. And the thing that I talk about all the time is that we are risk averse in many aspects, aspects of our life. So for example, I always talk about, you know, personal aspects, like probably everybody listening to this podcast, including you and I, have stayed in a relationship like way too long, right? And we stayed with it because we're comfortable. And it's like, we're like, hey, this maybe not really working that well. But, you know, like it's kind of going to be a pain to do something different, right? And then you move on from it. And then you're like, why didn't I do this earlier, right? And this is something that I think about all the time. And I think that's a lot of times is that sometimes we'll stick with things. And that's what I was doing in my fitness journey, is I was sticking with things that, you know, were I could do, but they weren't actually. So I had to like take risks in the sense that I had to try something different to figure out that process. And I think that's the thing is, you kind of got to talk about like how we become a risk averse and kind of identify as like, hey, are we doing this because it's comfortable for us or because it's working, right? Like I used to say this, and I'm sure you're guilty of this too, right? We'd say, oh, our traditional teachers, right? And we'd say that as saying our bad teachers, right? But right. That's not true. Our traditional practice is not bad. Bad practice is bad. Like you and I tell a lot of stories when we talk. Storytelling is the oldest practice in teaching and learning. And Right. Yet we use it to this day. So like it's, and I think part of it too is we kind of paint like, so it's like, hey, if you did this 100 years ago and it's working for kids today, keep doing it. That's awesome. But if you do this 100 years ago and it doesn't work, but you're the person comfortable with it, then that's where you got to take that risk. You got to try something different because you got to look at like, what am I trying to achieve? And I think that's, you know, a lot of people, I think it's just kind of being aware of that sometimes. And like you said, I'm in the same belief. I don't think anyone goes to work. And it's the same true. I think we always say that for teachers, but I think the same for administrators, right? We crap on administrators. A lot of times administrators they're not trying to wreck the lives of others, but they don't see some of the inadequacies or some of the things that they're doing wrong. And a lot of times because they're extremely isolated, there's not usually a principal across the hallway in your own school that you can talk to, right? It's a very isolating position. And so kind of giving that grace and kind of, you know, connecting that too. And I think that, because like you said, people are trying to do the best they can. But I think one of the things that, you know, really kind of embodies the notion of innovator's mindset is how do we like self-identify ways that we can move forward before we help others move forward as well.
Yeah. I've heard you speak powerfully before about another aspect of that traditional teaching thing where it's kind of the stereotype that maybe someone will say like, what we need is we need new, young, innovative teachers. And we need to have some of these older teachers retire and get out of the profession and clear the way for the new generation. Right. And I've heard you speak powerfully about that in the past that like, hey, sometimes the staff, the most experienced staff members are some of the most innovative, creative teachers on the whole campus. And it's sometimes maybe even the young teacher who's coming in with a very fixed mindset about education.
Well, it's funny. So the reason I'm laughing is because exactly what you just said about, you know, like people are like, oh, these young teachers and we get, I was actually remember there was a lineup to speak to me after and asking questions after a keynote. And there was a teacher probably 2 years in. And she was like, yeah, we get just rid of all these older teachers. And it's like, everyone behind her is an older teacher. And they're like, what are you like, you know, I can hear you. right? Like I'm right here. And it was like, just because you're older, is like one of the, you know, like, oh, you must be doing things the old way and stuff like that. And I think the reason why a lot of younger teachers, and it's like, again, it's more about mindset than anything. Oh, the younger teachers that come into the profession teach the way they were taught. That's why the bell doesn't dismiss you, I dismiss you statement is one that's passed down generation after generation. Not, you probably said that, I said it. That was not something we made up, right? We live in different countries. I guarantee you heard it. And it's just passed on practice. There's a pretty funny story about why I really started being explicit about saying that. I remember this, I was in Australia. I was speaking at a conference and I said something. I said in my talk, and this is like very early on when I started speaking, I said, we got to get to the place, you know, like we have all these young teachers coming in here and they, you know, have these great ideas. And then we have, you know, some of our older teachers that, you know, that are like, look, I've been teaching 30 years. You don't need to tell me what to do. And we got to really think about, you know, our mindset and how we look at these things. Right. And now I said something along those lines. Right. So I remember I got this email after, and this is one of my favorite terms ever. So this person is like, oh, George, I love the stuff you're talking about. Here's what I really appreciated. I love this. I love this. I do take issue with the story about, you know, you're saying like, you know, a teacher that's been teaching for 30 years. Because I felt it was granny bashing. It was like the term that you
used. Granny bashing. I
actually have the email and they said, like, you're granny bashing. Right. And I was like, every time I say that now, I literally think about that email and granny bashing. So I actually just swapped. I just swapped the narratives, right? Because a lot of people took from the story, even though I wasn't saying it was about age, it was about mindset. But because I used, you know, the new teacher trying the new things and the older teacher, you know, stuck in their ways, that's what they got caught up on was the age difference. So now what I talk about is, you know, the new teacher that's teaching the way they were taught, you know, versus the teacher that's been in the profession for 35 years, still trying to get better, still trying to grow. And then I always say, and the opposite can be true, right? So I make sure that it's, and I said, this is all about mindset, not just about where we are in a career. And it was that, and it's like, you know, we've talked about this a lot, you know, publicly and privately, is that, you know, the way that criticism was delivered was as important as the criticism in itself, is that the person was, you know, made sure that they knew they were trying to help me to get better, not trying to put me in my place and say they were better than me. And they helped me. And I took that, you know, I was like, wow. And like how much that helped me and how it like, because I think a lot of times when you share those messages, she wasn't the first person that felt that. She was just the first person that reached out to me, right? And so Now I fix that for everyone kind of moving forward so they didn't misinterpret that in the way that person had interpreted it in that moment. And it was, like I said, it wasn't just about the criticism, it was the delivery. And I actually, I kept that email and her and I kept in touch after. And I said, hey, this is what I say now, thanks to you. And I so appreciate it. Like I really, and you know, and she was, I think she was 75 years old when she sent me that email, and like evidence of an amazing teacher, like even through email, how she taught me to help me get better and still resonates to this day.
Yeah. So I mentioned the prolific thing with you, which is just stands out. But another thing that stands out for me, George, is more than I think anyone I know, I have heard stories from other people who tell me that they started blogging, got connected, whatever it is, It was you that pushed them off the starting block and got them going on something that maybe they had been considering doing for a long time. And so I think you have a true talent of mentoring people and getting them off that starting block and getting them going. And so when you think about your skill set, as far as like trying to convince people to take action, what makes you so successful, do you think?
I think for me is listening, kind of understanding, then, you know, hearing what they're saying and trying to like say like, hey, this is really important. Like more people need to know what you just shared with me. So how do we get to the space? And so ensuring that they know that I see value, but the value should go beyond me. But I think too, like, you know, because of a teacher too, one of the things that I'm really proud of is that several of the authors that, you know, this is probably their first time they've ever had something published. They also are going to publish. We're already talking about them having book contracts with us. And I remember like Darren who wrote Because of a Teacher Too. I approached him. He actually just shared this on his Instagram stories. And I'm going to try to, it's Nakahara. Hopefully I'm not messing up too bad. I've never actually heard him say his last name. And Darren, if you're listening, I apologize. Please correct me how I said it. He actually shared in his stories yesterday. I approached him about writing a book and he's like, what do I have to say? And I said, I'm like, Darren, I love your Instagram and like kind of going, you know, the influence you've had on me, Dave. I said, like, I just want you to write the way you talk. I think people just will really resonate with this because I think a lot of people take, and I remember having this conversation with Jimmy Cassis, right? Jimmy's like, I'm not a writer. I'm like, I want to read what you're saying to me right now. I don't want you to write into, I don't want to be, here's writer Jimmy and here's speaker Jimmy. I want the same person so that we're having this conversation. And so Darren yesterday, he shared on his Instagram stories, he's kind of, you know, teasing the book out. He said that he thought he had nothing to write. And so I said, well, how about you write a chapter in this book? How about you start there? And he said he wrote it and it was like amazing how easily it flowed out of him. And then he started seeing that. And I think part of it too is one of the things I've always said is how do you help move people from their point A to point B? It's like trying to help people find like, hey, just try this one little thing. And then once they see the success in themselves, and I remember Yasmeen Robbins, who also wrote the book, she's like, thank you so much for like this opportunity to write in this book. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. No. Thank you for writing in this book. Because like, I just asked you, but you did the hard work. And like, she's absolutely incredible. Her and I connected years ago. And I think I think this is what my best principles have done for me. And I always think of Kelly Wilkins, who I mentioned earlier as well. What I try to do is help people see what's already in them. That's all I do. I'm not trying to get them to believe something they're not. I'm like, hey, do you see what you are right now? And then I help them see it. And once they realize it, that's when they start putting their stuff out. And I think that's what I love about it. That's one of my, if I could do one millionth of what Kelly Wilkins did for me, then I will be considered my career a success for sure.
Yeah. Even the previous guest on my podcast was Lainey Rao, episode 14, who just did Evolving with Gratitude with Impress. And she mentioned that it was, you had tapped her on the shoulder for Because of a Teacher, yep, the first volume, and through writing some of that, and then you encouraged her to do this, you know, what was her second book, Evolving with Gratitude. And so I think that's a special skill and talent you have. And I've talked to people even about this, George, where they'll tell me, see, there's this John Wooden quote that I love, be quick, but don't hurry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other thing that I think about. You are extraordinarily quick. You're fast to move and to iterate, and you're willing to make some mistakes, knowing that you're going to also quickly iterate on those mistakes. And that was, you know, John Wooden also said, in this quote is attributed to a bunch of different ways. But basically, the team that makes the most mistakes usually wins because because doers make mistakes.
Yep.
And I've had people tell me that they've said to you, yeah, I'm thinking about starting a blog, and you will contact them and say, well, I've got a few minutes right now. Go ahead and get your account set up. I'll help you right now. And they're like, whoa, 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 hold on a second. I didn't mean like now I'm going to start a blog. It's like, no, seriously. Like, I'm going to call you. Like, where are you right now? And like, get online and you'll lead them through the process. I mean, WordPress should probably send you royalty checks.
Right. You should.
Because of the number of people that you've done that with. And there's something about that of getting people to take action, where people love to talk about stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But then you'll say, okay, sure. Like, so then let's do it.
Lainey sent me the podcast yesterday. And she's like, thank you so much for doing it. I'm like, Lainey, I got you going. You know how hard it is to write a book? Mine was the easy part, right? And I said, there's a lot of people that I give this advice to and they don't do anything with it. And I think that, you know, that to me, if if you act upon, you know, if you're like, hey, here's what's some advice, and then I give it to them and then they don't use it, that is, I'll be honest with you, it's frustrating. Cause I was like, hey, you said you want this, but you're not doing the things to make that happen. Whereas Lainey, like Lainey's, you know, she's awesome. She's incredible because I just said like, why don't you think about this? And then boom, she's gone. And she's gone. She wrote a tremendous book. It's just getting amazing praise. And I know, and she's absolutely incredible. She's a very good friend of mine.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I want to thank you for, George, is you've been helpful to me in dealing with some stuff, like whether it's online, social media, haters, trolls. We've had several conversations about stuff like that. And I mentioned your vulnerability in your email. And one of the, another thing that you've been vulnerable about is your journey with anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we've had some discussions about that too. And certainly I see someone for anxiety and different things. And you mentioned a book, Dare, and you recommended that book to me. And I would like to tell you that I got it and read it, but that's not how it happened. Yeah. This is another example of a tactic of getting someone to take action is that you knew, as I said to you, I think I'll check that book out, that I probably wasn't going to check that book out. And so what you did, I don't know if you remember this, but what you did is you said, I'm going on Amazon right now and I'm sending it to you. And you went on Amazon and you just had the book shipped to me because you knew that I probably wasn't going to get it.
Right.
And yet I could gather something from it and gain something from it. So thank you for that. And like, that's just another example of kind of getting people off the starting block and building that momentum.
Well, and you know, I think a lot of times, I knew you were struggling with some stuff, and I'm a very empathetic person that a lot of times when I see someone struggling with things, I feel what they're struggling with because, you know, it's something I went through. I'm like, I don't want anyone to go through this. So yeah, he's reading this book. Cause that, like, literally, I remember reading that on a plane and I was like, felt like 1,000 pounds lifted off my shoulders right away. And it was like, I started figuring stuff out about myself and, you know, it, like anything, it didn't solve everything, but boy, it gave me some good strategy. So yeah, it's a book I definitely recommend.
Yeah. It's one of the things they talk about in the book.
You get all these people saying like, can you buy it from me, George?
Yeah, exactly. I just cost you a lot of money right there.
Yeah.
Hey, you recommended that book for me and you didn't buy it for me. Like, what's going on here? Like, so my high school basketball coach, shout out to Pete Colinelli. And I'm sorry, George, I don't have the soundboard, so I can't give the...
You want a shout out button? Sure. Yeah. I'll give you a shout out button. There you go.
There we go. All right. Shout out to Pete Colinelli. And one of the things I really remember that he used to do, and it's mentioned in the book about how reframing the kind of emotion, the experience that you're having in your body with anxiety, is he would talk to us before big games and he would acknowledge the fact that we were probably had all sorts of butterflies in our stomach. We were nervous and, you know, got that little sweaty palms as we're about, you know, we're out stretching out, getting ready to go into the gym for this big game. And he would always say, like, those butterflies, like, you think that's you being nervous. It's like, that's your body telling you that you're ready to perform at a high level. Your body is giving you all the signs that you realize this is a big moment and that you're ready for it. And so you reframe this idea of these butterflies into us seeing those butterflies as a sign of preparation and being ready, and that our body was telling us it was go time. And that was something that was helpful for me as a high school athlete. And when I read Dare, that was one of the strategies and things that they talked about, is reframing these feelings that we have in our body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing is that I remember reading some of the stuff about your body dealing with anxiety. And I was like, oh, that's why that happens. Right. Like, so I won't spoil it for you, but I was like, oh, okay. There's your body dealing with something. Yeah. Like it was like a fascinating thing. And I think it helps you learn about how you deal with some of this stuff. Right. And I, like, you know, it's the same with you, Dave, I'm sure, you know, like, it's not like it cured anxiety, but it gave you some of the tools to like help you in some of the toughest moments. Right. And in kind of what you're sharing. And I think one of the best pieces of advice I got was from Joe Sanfilippo. It wasn't his advice, it was from his wife. She said, don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing that way too much. And I think that was really helpful because I think a lot of times you get caught up in people that, you know, that it's not like they, and I think a lot of times you're like it's, it's not that they don't have something of value to say, but they're not, maybe don't have something of value to say to you because they don't have, you know, they don't really care about your life for whatever reason. And that's fine. But I think a lot of times, like I look at the people who are closest to me that are cheering for my success. Those are the people I listen to. Like even, you know, I talk about the granny bashing email. That was someone who wanted to see me successful. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I took that criticism very well and it was how it's delivered. So, you know, I tend to, I've learned to kind of just ignore, stuff from people that I would not, you know, that I would not want my kids interacting with in the sense that, you know, I would tell my kids, don't, you can tell really quickly if people want you to be successful. And if they don't, these aren't people you want to be around.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. George, one of the things that, you're also fantastic at is speaking. And I know that's something that you take a lot of pride in, that you spend a lot of time working on, and you don't just become a great speaker overnight. And it's not not something that's just natural. You know, people sometimes will think that if they see a great speaker, that's just the way that it all started. But that's not the way it starts. It's hard. There's hard work behind it. And I know you have an online course that kind of helps people become better speakers and to craft presentations. And if people just in general want to get connected with you, your newsletter, your online courses, find your books, see your social media feed, like where are some of the best places to get connected with you?
Well, the easiest one's georgecross.ca. And it's not California, by the way, it's Canada. So that's where everything is. And that when you mention the course, I am a learner first. That is the most important aspect of the work that I do. And I've had the opportunity to speak at just amazing conferences, but a lot of times I will go early or I'll stay late to watch people because I always want to get better at what I do. And I'm not just talking about other keynotes. I will go into like so many people's sessions, learn from them, try to pick up stuff. And I think one of the things that you and I know that we really appreciate is that we want people, you know, you do this in the books. I know you do this in conversations with people. We don't want people replicating what we do, but learning from us, but at the end of the day, to be their authentic selves. I think a lot of people I've connected with, they want to go into speaking, they want to do those things, and then they try to be something they're not, and people pick that up real quick. I think when you have that opportunity to be your authentic self a little bit louder, and I think that's the best way I'd say it, on stage, that's when people will really connect with you and they want to see something really real. So that's that. So georgecross.ca is obviously the best place to kind of learn with me, connect with me, and share those ideas. And you'll see all the other stuff there too. And what's really kind of interesting, georgecross.ca actually is my blog that became my website, but it's my portfolio of my work. And the whole reason I even started it in the first place is because we were trying to do digital portfolios with our students and we were not being effective. And the reason I can 100% guarantee you this, the reason we were trying to teach something to our kids that we never did ourselves. So I said, I'm going to go first as the principal. I'm going to figure this out and try to understand this from a viewpoint of a learner. And then that I did it first. Then I taught my staff. My staff taught our students. And then it spread out to basically 10,000 kids in our district from kindergarten to grade 12, actually having their own space or having the opportunity to share in their own space. Because, you know, that's been a mantra for me is that, you know, if you want to lead, you have to learn first. And I think that to me is, that's where that all came out of. So I just continue to share those stories of learning but it was all because I wanted to help kids. That was the whole reason the thing started. It had nothing to do with, I want to be a speaker. I didn't even know that was a job, to be honest with you, at the time. I just wanted to understand how could this help my kids.
Yeah, I love that. And so go connect with George through the website. You'll find all his social media there as well. He's a great follow. Subscribe to the podcast, the Innovators Mindset Podcast. And you heard him say he committed. It's going to be regular. It's going to come out on time. And so get subscribed to the podcast. And we really hope that you'll pick up a copy of Because of a Teacher, Volume 2. If you didn't pick up Volume 1 yet, of course, we would love it if you grabbed that too. Mm-hmm. Both books are fantastic. You're going to be inspired. This was a tough year for educators everywhere. And this is going to really lift you up and kind of give you something that you could read. Now's the perfect time. Summer's the perfect time to read this, to kind of re-energize, recharge for the coming year. And of course, his books, The Innovator's Mindset, is used across the world. It's used in education classes. Whole districts have used it, implemented book studies on it. It's had an incredible impact, one of the best-selling books in education over the last many years. And then he has a fantastic book that he wrote with Katie Novak, which is kind of a mashing together of The Innovator's Mindset with her work with UDL. Mm-hmm. Also a fantastic book. So pick up George's books.
Yeah, can I just jump in before you finish off?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask everybody listening to do this. If you pick up Because of a Teacher, Because of a Teacher 2, and you read a chapter and it resonates with you, hit up the author of the chapter. There's a lot of people that's their very first time writing, and I did have to coax them. Some of them, I just got a message from somebody literally while we're sitting at this podcast saying, like, I'm so nervous about this too. And I think a lot of times in education is about elevation. And so of course, you know, like, I think as much as I love Innovator's Mindset, I'm so proud of these Because of a Teacher books, because there's so many more people that started writing and putting their stuff out there. And if any of the resonates, I think this is, we're very guilty of this. And I try my best. We have these like, wow, that was an amazing chapter. And then we just go on with our day. Just take 2 seconds to like reach out to that person, social media, find their email, do whatever, because a lot of them are nervous. I'm nervous about it too, every time I write something, but a lot of times this is their first go. And yeah, I'm sure they would love to hear that too, because I hope that everyone that writes in the book, and there already are some authors, you know, writes their own book eventually. So hopefully you can do that if you pick up either of those books.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And it kind of goes to the whole Yelp phenomenon too, right? If you have a great meal at a restaurant, you don't often go like, you know what, I'm going to just jump on Yelp and tell them how great they were. But if you have a bad meal, then maybe that's when people go on there. And so if you've been impacted by something you read, that is a great idea to contact them and let them know, because they're sitting there on the edge of their seats, wondering how their message is being received. Right. And so help them out with that. So George, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. You've been a big part of my life over the last several years. It's been an honor to both publish your work, but then work with you now to publish other people's work too. And I really value our relationship and our connection that, like I said, started off rough. Go check out that episode of the Innovator's Mindset.
It was like a rom-com, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Go check out that episode. We hated each other first, and then, wow, we just fell in love, right?
So exactly.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah, but I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and can't wait to hear people's reaction to the new book.
Thank you so much for listening to the Dave Burgess Show. Let's connect. I am at Burgess Dave on Twitter. My name just flipped around to Burgess Dave. On Instagram, I am DBC_INC, and I blog at DaveBurgess.com. Please share your thoughts and comments on social media using the hashtag Dave Burgess Show. It would mean the world to me if you share the show with friends and colleagues, and I would be honored if you left a positive review on whatever platform you listen on. Hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you have a question, a topic, or a guest recommendation for the show, just email me at dave@daveburgess.com, put podcast question in the subject line, and I absolutely cannot wait to join you on the next episode.